A shell exploded. Fragments of shrapnel hit a young soldier. He fell to the ground. Before long, nurses with East Coast prep school accents, volunteers at the American Hospital of Paris, helped the young man into a makeshift operating theater. The emergency surgery was in the elegant ballroom of a casino in Fontainebleau, 40 miles south of Paris. A tall man with thick, dark hair, blue eyes, bushy brows, large but nimble hands, and a boxer's face was soon at the shattered young man's side. His name was Dr. Sumner Jackson, a 56-year-old American and the chief surgeon of the American Hospital of Paris. Sumner began to examine the young man's leg and decided there was only one thing for it. It would have to go. He needed a saw. It would be no easy operation given the poor light in the casino. A few minutes later, the boy lay in agony on a roulette table as Sumner prepared to remove his leg, carefully cutting off the flow of blood through his arteries. If Sumner made a mistake, the boy could bleed to death. Sumner took a scalpel and sliced across the boy's muscles, revealing the underlying bone. With an oscillating saw, he cut through the bone and filed down the rough edges before delicately laying muscle and skin flaps over the stump. It was painstaking work that took great care and concentration in the dim light, and Sumner took intense pride in his expertise. A superb combat surgeon, arguably the finest of his generation, he had vast experience, having spent much of the last war trying to repair shattered young bodies. In 1916, he had volunteered for Britain's Royal Army Medical Corps and had arrived in Flanders with other Americans who had defied U.S. President Woodrow Wilson's call for neutrality. He was assigned to a surgery near the Somme battlefield, where over 90% of those who went over the top and attacked German positions ended up being killed or wounded. Sumner had operated on hundreds of young men whose limbs had been torn asunder by shellfire. 25 years later, he was once again doing his best to save lives. But there was something particularly unnerving about the nature of men's wounds in this new war. It only took one German 88mm shell to kill dozens of troops if caught out in the open. Hitler's modern weapons were designed to rip humans to small pieces of flying flesh, to turn them to hamburger. Sumner completed the amputation, ensuring that the boy's leg was carefully bandaged. There was no time to rest. Dozens of other gravely wounded men lay waiting their turn. Sumner was working sometimes deep into the night, often beside a fellow American doctor named Dr. Charles Bove, sawing, cutting, stitching, trying to save as many soldiers and civilians as they could. The casino's corridors were filled with emergency surgical cases, patients begging for water or lying in grim silence, resigned to death. Whenever Sumner straightened his back and took a drink of coffee or water, he could see yet more who had been laid out on the baccarat tables, waiting to suffer the saw. There were as many urgent cases awaiting Sumner when he returned to his base, the American Hospital of Paris, reputedly the best equipped in Europe, where he had worked since 1925. He made the journey back and forth in a white ambulance, sometimes driven by an upper-class young American volunteer, through the working-class outskirts of Paris and then to the leafy streets of upscale Neuilly-sur-Seine. Many Parisians could not remember such a glorious spring. The chestnuts along the Avenue Foch, where Sumner and his wife and 12-year-old son lived in a ground-floor apartment at number 11, were a wonderful green. Breezes carried the sweet scent of purple lilacs and lilies of the valley. From a wide terrace adjoining his office on the fourth floor of the hospital, when Sumner was able to take a break from surgery, he could see the city's immense elegance as he stood for a few minutes relaxing, usually smoking a cigar or more often a cigarette. Sumner's view of Paris, spread out before him, was fabulous, with the Eiffel Tower clear in the distance a few miles to the southeast. In the courtyard below, ambulances pulled up all that May, their bells ringing, returning from the front lines. The impossible was happening. France was falling. Anyone who could get out of Paris was doing so. Many of his American colleagues at the hospital, a cornerstone of the expatriate community since 1910, and his wealthy neighbors on Avenue Foch, several of them Jews, had already fled. Sumner had seen the rise of fascism in Europe, the weakness of European democracies, and the appeasement of Hitler, whom he despised. He had been convinced the previous fall, after war had broken out, that the United States would join her allies from the last war to once again put Germany in her place. Hitler would be stopped. Sumner could not believe that America would stay neutral and let Europe fall into the abyss once again. But now, his worst fears were being confirmed. A fortnight earlier, Europe had exploded as the Nazis launched a massive spring offensive in the West. Since May 10th, Sumner had read headlines that grew more ominous by the day. The Wehrmacht had stormed with seemingly unstoppable force through Belgium, Holland, and northern France. Hitler's armies were less than 100 miles from Paris. The French were in retreat, the nation losing heart, it seemed, and the unimaginable happening. Indeed, Sumner knew. It was no longer a question of whether France would be defeated, but when. Operating on severely wounded young men consumed all of Sumner's waking hours. When he did have time to wipe his brow, take a long gulp of coffee, and drag on a cigarette as he gazed to the south from his terrace, he could not help but think about his 52-year-old wife and their son, Philip, at home on Avenue Foch, a couple of miles from the Eiffel Tower.